Now convene the House Special Committee meeting on Budget Subcommittee on Human Services and Public Safety. Today is Tuesday, May 30th, 2005, and today we are actually convening a work session on House Bill 5131. Oregon Disabilities Commission will be taking public testimony and will not be working on a budget today, but nevertheless, since it's been noticed as a work session, that's what we're conducting. And with that, you give us an introduction, Deborah Manfred.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members. As you said, this is a work session on the Oregon Disabilities Commission budget. It's a little different. This is the first time the agency's been before subcommittee. So we're kind of back to the traditional phase one, phase two type of information is going to be presented to you by the executive director, Danielle Knight, and if you wanted to come on up while I'm babbling through my introduction, that would be great. last week, I submitted some overview materials to you detailing the other piece that's unusual about this budget is the budget that was presented as the governor's recommended budget was considered a placeholder. They were working on a revised proposal, which they have finished now. And that's what Ms. Knight is going to present to you here today.
Good morning.
Good morning. Mr. Chair and members of the subcommittee, just a quick correction. I'm going to provide phase one and phase two, the history and some information of the last 2 years, and then Pam Teschner from DAS will be providing the new revised proposed budget from the governor, if that's okay. Okay. So I guess I should introduce myself. My name is Danielle Knight. I'm the current acting executive director of the Oregon Disabilities Commission. I'm not formally the acting director. The previous director resigned her position in August, and I took over then and have been winging it all along. And I apologize to members of the audience. There was no official request for interpreters or real-time captioners for this morning's meeting. So this morning, or this afternoon, there will be. So I'd like just to start with some brief history and then move into Pam's proposed budget, which is, I guess, the most important part of this. Yes, and I'll take a deep breath. I'm extremely nervous. Sorry. Okay. As per our statute, 185.120, the Legislative Assembly finds that there is a costly lack of coordination among the numerous public and private agencies and organizations serving individuals with disabilities in Oregon. Therefore, a need for an Oregon Disabilities Commission to act as a link among and between these entities so that limited resources can be used most efficiently better to serve the needs of individuals with disabilities is the reason the commission was created some years ago. The goals of the commission are to improve access to and effectiveness and appropriateness of services provided to Oregonians with disabilities. And excuse me really quick for the interpreter if I'm going too fast. Please let me know.
You're probably going to slow down just a hair.
The second goal is to connect Oregonians with disabilities with the services they need. I'm glad you're all smiling.
Fine. You have plenty of time.
I know.
So just...
Yeah.
I know, so you're okay.
Can I read that?
You'll do fine.
Okay.
Can I ask a question, please? Do you have any written testimony available that I can
pick up? I do, actually. Wendy Liedelbacher has the entire presentation. You're welcome.
What page are you
on? I'm currently on page 4 for the core values. I'm just going to briefly go through a few of those values. As you can see, the rest of them are there, but the most important to the commission are the universal access, which is to monitor and increase communication, structural, and programmatic accessibility to all people in Oregon with disabilities, to remain independent, to promote full independence in daily living, transportation, and community at large, equal rights to facilitate the implementation of ADA and other federal and state disability-related laws, employment, which is a core goal that the commission has been focusing on for the last 03-05 biennium specifically because unemployment in Oregon is so high for people with disabilities. So we tried to improve opportunities for people with disabilities to obtain gainful employment, specifically with state agencies through some trainings that we created. And if it's okay with the committee, I can move on to programs and services on page 6.
Okay, we're now page six.
They don't have this same one. Do you want to pass it out really quick?
We made some brief changes over the weekend, and I'd hope to get here earlier, but Wendy will pass out the current presentation. So we're all on the same page.
Thank you.
The Oregon Disabilities Commission has a few programs. On page 9 of the presentation you're being handed out is a breakdown of the structure of the programs that we currently have. We currently have 5 subcommittees of the commission that are active. And through those, we have the general administration program that's administered by the staff inside the office, and then the subcommittees, which are administered by the commissioners outside the office, that are strictly volunteer, that are chaired by commissioners and then members of the community, which are state agencies, and city and county agencies attend on those committees to provide different services. Specifically, we try to identify and advocate for issues critical to people with disabilities in Oregon. We generally do that over the phone or the internet. We get a lot of phone calls daily or emails daily from constituents that need assistance for us to advocate or mediate a situation for them because they're low income, they can't afford an attorney, or they think that they need to automatically sue an agency, and we try to mediate that process so there's no suit involved. We assist the general public and local state agencies in location of appropriate services and resources, meaning that when they call, if they have a situation, the majority of our calls are for short-term disability. A lot of Oregonians don't understand that Oregon doesn't have short-term disability, so if they've become injured for some reason, they call us immediately to determine what benefits are available to them, and we explain what resources they can find inside Oregon, going around the fact that there is no short-term disability. We provide technical consultation to local and state building code officials through our access committee. Daryl Ackerman, the current chair of the commission, is also the chair of that committee, and he has, I believe, 10 volunteers that sit on that committee, and it's very active. They meet once a month, and during the 0305 session, I believe, they acted on 31 ADA-related issues, which is quite a bit. It revolves around the current ADAG that's been posted. I'm sorry, I don't know what the full definition of the ADAG is. I'm not real familiar with it. Otherwise, I'd provide that to you. But as on page 8, it states that clients such as the Department of Transportation, the Lottery Commission, the City of Newport, and Douglas County Building Department are all active clients of the Access Committee. It's a free service that we provide, and basically it forms around structural access under the ADA, which has been really popular these days with all the new construction inside state and local government. We assist local and state agencies in complying with the Americans with Disabilities Act by providing trainings. And on page 8 of that, seven of that presentation, we hosted 30 brown bag trainings, which are lunch trainings to state and local agencies to provide current ADA information for whatever's going on. And they're very popular. We usually have a full room and lots of questions from state agencies specifically trying to stay current with the ADA. We report the findings to the governor and the legislature, like we are right now. And we coordinate and co-sponsor disability-related special events and other activities throughout the year. Usually, we coordinate those events with the Northwest ADA and IT Center in Portland, which is a federally funded program that revolves strictly around the Americans with Disabilities Act, which is the ADA. If you move on to page 7, it talks about the specific activities that we've done over the 0305 biennium. We conducted 2 week-long youth leadership forums, which is a conference for students that are juniors and seniors in high school to teach them advocacy and leadership skills for their future. We provide them inside look to state government by bringing them here one day during that week for them to meet with their legislature and the governor to talk about issues in their local communities that they want resolved. We conducted 2 employment award ceremonies that recognize employers who hire and promote persons with disabilities. We do that here in the Capitol in October. The last 2 years, it's been a pretty big event, And I believe Deborah attended last year. I'm not for sure, though. I was up talking really fast at the very beginning because, of course, I was nervous then, too. On page 8, specifically, I wanted to target a new training that was created during the 03-05 biennium. Even though the commission had very small revenue to work off of as far as creating new trainings, we partnered with the Northwest ADA and IT Center again to create Power Workshops, which is a training that targets businesses, employers, and hiring managers specifically on ways to hire people with disabilities and show them how easy it is to accommodate a person with disability and how cheap it can be. The training has been really successful. We've had 210 in attendance just since October when the training started. It's pretty exciting. It's a high-tech training. And if we can move on to page 10, I can specifically target the Deaf and Hard of Hearing Access Program, which is a program with inside the Oregon Disabilities Commission. It's a program that is funded strictly through other funds, through contracts that we have with state agencies. Currently, the largest contract that we have right now is the Department of Human Services. And for those contracts, we provide training to employees on how to work with people with disabilities, specifically the deaf and the hard of hearing community in Oregon. We provide trainings on deaf culture and TTY so they can be up to date and if they have any questions to specifically work with the deaf and hard of hearing community. And then we provide technical assistance to the state in general. If we have a 800 number that people from the community call and ask questions, whether it's technology related or whether it's culture related, we're able to answer those questions over the phone as well for that program. And then on page 11, the Client Assistance Program is a federal grant that's handed to us, I guess, specifically from the governor's office. And so we don't have enough staff inside the office to administer this program, so we subcontracted out to the Oregon Advocacy Center in Portland, and they do a phenomenal job running the program. But just a brief overview of what that is. The cap.
Would you mind, before you do that, explain what the Oregon Advocacy Center is and its relationship?
Sure. The Oregon Advocacy Center is a group of attorneys in Portland that specifically target disability issues in Oregon. They... I don't want to say they lobby, but I don't specifically know if they do. During the session, they come down here and they follow all of the bills that are going through session on disability issues and take a stand, whether it's opposition or support or a neutral position. And they also, outside of the client assistance program contract, they assist people with disabilities with issues at a lower rate. There's a program through the Oregon State Bar called Modest Means, and which is an attorney who will reduce their rate for a low-income individual. And the Oregon Advocacy Center, just on a general basis, has a low fee for people with disabilities to try to get their legal issues resolved, depending on what it is.
Thank you.
The Client Assistance Program was first given to the Commission in 1987, and it's required by each state in order to receive federal funds for public rehabilitation, which provided for the 4-to-1 match. So 4 federal funds to 1 state match. The program mission is to advise, inform, and advocate for applicants and clients regarding eligibility for services and benefits under the Rehabilitation Act of 1973. So specifically, the CAP program, or the Client Assistance Program, monitors vocational rehabilitation through the Department of Human Services. That all of the clients through vocational rehabilitation qualify for assistance through the Client Assistance Program if they have an issue with VR or vocational rehabilitation at DHS. Depending on what the situation is, CAP or Client Assistance Program will step in and be the attorney or the mediator between counselor or the Department of Vocational Rehabilitation and the client to make sure their services are being met to the quality they're supposed to be based on the grant. Should I mention Talon?
Yes, why don't you go ahead.
I didn't include in here because it's sunsetted, is the Technology Access for Life Needs Grant, short for Talon. It's sunsetted at the end of March, and will currently it will be back. The federal government is currently up in the air about how much money each state is getting, and so I don't currently know how much money Oregon will be receiving, but we're also mandated to do that program, and we subcontract that out to Access Technologies here in Salem, which is a technology-related corporation that provides technology for people with disabilities, and whether it's computer-related or wheelchair-related, they are a great resource, and they provide the talent grant. They provide trainings all over Oregon, and then they also go to the low-income individuals and provide technology if they need it, if it's a computer or a one-handed keyboard or something along those lines through this grant. The grant will again start October 1st, so it will be online as with the CAP contract, which is a nice thing because it's always been on the off year that we've had talent and CAP going back and forth. So the federal government will be on the same page. And I can move into performance measures, which starts on page 14.
Okay, before you do that, are there any questions? Okay.
Great.
Forward.
And I just wanted to note, to make the presentation shorter, I attached an appendix, and on pages 6 through 14 of the appendix is the review of the performance measure and all of the data from 2003-2005, in case you wanted to look further into that. On page 14, the two benchmarks that the Oregon Disabilities Commission follows, benchmark 59, employed disabled, percentage of adults with lasting significant disabilities who are capable of working who are employed. Benchmark number 2, number 60, disabled in poverty, percentage of Oregonians with a lasting developmental, mental, and or physical disability living in households with incomes below the federal poverty level.
Okay, well, stand by just for a minute. Let's catch up with you. You're giving us a one sentence on it. Committee members, if you want to open your booklet.
Starting on page 124.
Page 124 is where the summaries are.
I don't see what you're used to seeing.
So it doesn't really matter.
Oh.
They're all new. With no targets. This should,
yeah. If they're all new with no targets, it makes it fairly quick to do a comparison. All right, so we actually have two major Oregon benchmark numbers 59 and 60 that relate, and the various proposed performance measures all relate to those two. And they're all new, so there's no history.
Is that
correct?
Well, new meaning current for 03-05.
We don't have prior years.
They're not new for right now. There's two that were created in the 2003 session, but the rest of them are just, they all have history. So I think on page, let me show you which page in the appendix gives the graph. Right. starting on page 10 in the appendix, there is the graph. It starts back in 2002, as far back history that I went.
Okay.
For the performance measures.
All right. Okay.
Is that what you're asking?
Uh-huh.
Okay.
Behind the yellow sheet.
Got it. So this represents the percentage of partners that report that ODC. We didn't keep a heading.
Okay.
The chair.
Yes. Representative Henson.
Thank you. Ms. Knight, on all of these, it lists the number of assessments down at the bottom, the number of, for example, on...
How many surveys have been out?
Yeah, 289 assessment surveys from training periods provided. Is that the 289 from 02 through 07?
No, that was for just 2003, 2005.
Okay.
All of the numbers that are represented at the bottom, correct, are for the 2003-2005 okay. biennium. 2005, excuse me, current up through March. The end of March is the last tally that we took.
Would you give us some numbers, just roughly, of who you serve, how many people, like when you're talking about a survey of 289, is that 100% or 10% or just...
Specifically for performance measure number one, Mr. Chair, that is 100% for those trainings. So we had 289 in attendance for the trainings in the 2003-2005 biennium, and we were able to take a tally off of all of the surveys that we give at the end of every training.
All right. We're ready now.
Okay. I'm a little off track, so let me... Excuse me. Let me try to get back on track here if I'm a little confused. If it's okay,
Representative Hannah.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I think the thing that's a little confusing, this is my input here, that's a little different. Really, you've listed the benchmarks that we're measuring from, not the actual performance measure. And then as you look at the performance measure, unless we haven't got to it or found it between the pieces, you're showing the measurement but not the goal level of the performance measure.
Right. I did bring that information with me. I can give it to you if you'd like. I did realize that it wasn't in there, and I've changed this presentation probably 5 times in the last week and a half, so you have to excuse me, but I can get that to you, either verbally or in writing this afternoon.
Mr. Chair, follow-up. I think it would be very important that you provide so that if we're looking at a benchmark
right.
and the performance measure, we can actually measure against where you are
okay.
in your performance.
I mean, Mr. Chair, would you like me to do that right now as I go through the presentation?
If you know what it is, I think you should tell us, like on performance measure one, you're measured at 90%, but the goal was...
That'd be fine. Why don't you go ahead and give us your targets?
Okay. Mr. Chair and members of the subcommittee, I'll just really quick run through what those targets were, and if you'd like to write them down individually, I can do that, or I can just do it individually as we go through each performance measure.
Do you want to go through each performance measure individually?
It's whatever you want to do.
I think that'd be fine. So why don't you take one by one?
Okay, I will do that. On page 15, the performance measures start. And for the target for 2003, 2004, and 2005, for performance measure number one, it was at 90%.
Wait a minute. Okay, now we're at page 15 of the presentation out of the appendix, right?
Correct. And right.
So which 15? Other 15?
Pardon.
This one here?
No, first 15.
First 15.
Coming up from page one.
Gotcha.
Okay, we are with you.
Okay. So performance measure number one is for percentages of partners that report that the Oregon Disabilities Commission provided technical assistance that helped them formulate more effective policies and strategies to improve services to persons with disabilities. Our target rate for 2003-2005 biennium was 90%. And for 2004, it was 91%. And 2005, to the end of May, was 90%. So we're within a very close range of what we wanted to be. In 2004, we were over, which is nice.
Okay, thank you.
Performance measure number two, percentage of trainees that report they can more effectively work with Oregonians. Our target data for 2004-2005 was 65%, which is what we met for 2003-2005 biennium.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Henson.
Okay. Which group of trainees are we talking about? Are these employers or are these people with disabilities?
Both. Well, these trainings, these are specifically the ADA brown bags that we provide on a monthly basis that go out. We have a listserv that we send out the notice to over email, and then we also have a listserv that we send out to state agencies, county agencies, and city agencies that attend. Performance measure number three on page 16. The percentage of clients receiving assistive technology services and related training through the Technology for Life Needs program who rated services good or excellent, which is specifically targeted through the Technology Access for Life Needs grant, which is administered through Access Technology. For the 2003-2005 biennium, their target data was 90%. And they reached 90% for 2004, and for 2005 they haven't gathered their data yet.
Okay.
Performance measure number four, percentage of clients receiving services and or technical assistance through the client assistance program who rated services good or excellent. For 2003-2005, their target was 90%. And on page 13 of the appendices, you can see that they only received back six assessment surveys, which is specifically because it's a self-administered survey, but they reached their target data at 100%.
Yes, correct.
Well, yeah, 2003. And then 2004, it shows that it's at 65%. So I guess it would be 100% for both years, since their target was 65%.
Oh.
Does that make sense at all?
I thought the goal was 90.
Yeah.
Well, this is on number four, and you're saying the target was 65%?
Oh, excuse me. The target was 90%.
There you go.
Sorry.
You want to? Well, it's a very small survey,
right?
And so, when one person says it was miserable, excuse everything. This is based on only six respondents,
right?
Okay.
The client assistance program, on average, Mr. Chair and members of the subcommittee, only about once a year. I want to say, off the last report that I received from them, they were following four cases. So specifically the client assistance program, since it only targets the vocational rehabilitation program, the complaints that they accept to follow up on to open up a case and actually have the litigation with VR through the administration and the counselor, it's very minimal. I mean, there's a lot of complaints that come in about VR, but not all of them are on the highest standard to open up a case and have attorneys involved. Usually it can be something resolved inside vocational rehabilitation.
Okay. So, Representative Hansen?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So the people surveyed are only the people who have actually had cases open?
Correct. Those who have received the services through the client assistance program. Mm-hmm.
So people that were turned down for service or who don't qualify or who just had contact with the program, they're not surveyed.
Right.
All right.
Okay.
Number six.
Actually, number five. Performance measure number five, percentage of clients receiving services and or technical assistance through the Deaf and Hard of Hearing Access Program who rated services good or excellent. Our target data for 2003-2005 biennium was 85%. And on page 14 of the appendices, we reached 84% for 2004 and 80% for 2003.
What's the pool for surveys on that one?
What's the pool for surveys? Specifically, we send surveys out to all those, to all the agencies we have contracts with and those who get services through the contract, meaning specifically for the Department of Human Services, they have a lot of case managers that request services for interpreter services or trainings, and we send out surveys to all those that we receive in questions from or requests from. And then we also have a process that every time our phone rings, we get information, contact information for the individual who's calling, and we send them a survey also. Usually by the end of that day, it's in the mail. It's a low return rate on those over the phone. But those from state agencies, we always get information back on. Performance measure number six, percentage of clients receiving general services and or technical assistance through the Oregon Disabilities Commission Administrative Office who rated services good or excellent. Our target data for 2003-2005 was 75%. And on page 15 of the appendices, we reached 66% for 2004 and 66% for 2003. And for 2005, through the end of May, it was 75%. And that, again, is based on the same process. It's those who call the phone we send a survey to and receive back. Mostly, this year we got a lot back. And that's the end of my performance measures.
Questions on performance measures? Okay, thank you.
One comment, Mr. Chair and members of the subcommittee. For the 2003 session, when Janine was here presenting performance measures, we didn't have very much feedback based on, we didn't have really a great process set up to get that feedback. And I believe that in the last 2 years, we've done a great job through the commissioners and through the staff in the office to get those who call and ask for referral information to send back the information by following up. Instead of just sending the survey, we call them and say, did you receive the survey? And are you satisfied with it, and can you send it back to us, which has been pretty successful. I'd like to move on to the organizations. Also noted on the title page of the organizations, the programs and budget issues can be found in the appendices on pages 20 through 24, just to shorten the presentation. The current setup of the commission is it's a 15 member appointed board. It's appointed by the governor's office. Individuals throughout the state apply through an application process through the governor's office. They read the application and then appoint based on the application. Currently, we only have 9 appointed commissioners, one still waiting appointment from the Senate. We have one full-time executive director. We have a part-time office manager and a part-time receptionist that administers the general program, the advocacy program for the Oregon Disabilities Commission. Within the same office, we have the Deaf and Hard of Hearing Access Program that has funding for one full-time program manager and one full-time ECS coordinator, which is the interpreter coordinator that coordinates all the interpreters and trainings that are requested throughout the state. We also have the two programs, the TALEN program, the Technology Access for Life Needs program that's administered through Access Technologies, and the Client Assistance program that's administered by the Oregon Advocacy Center.
Mr. Chair, may I ask a clarifying question?
Sure. Yes, Monday.
Ms. Knight, you're describing the 0305 organization, is that correct?
Correct.
Not the 0507.
Right, 2003-2005. I just wanted to give a brief overview of what we are currently, and then Pam Teschner will give the 0507 overview.
Mr. Chair.
President,
thank you, Mrs. Knight. But while we're looking at that, so which, you're losing one slot, right?
I'm losing one slot for 0507?
Yes, ma'am.
Yes. Currently, and for the 0507 budget, it's... I don't...
We're
eliminating one position. On the original governor's proposed budget, we were eliminating the program manager position through the Deaf and Hard of Hearing Access Program. So that program, through the original governor's proposed budget, would only have the full-time ECS coordinator or interpreter coordinator.
Okay.
Right. It's a little confusing. You have to excuse me. It's really confusing because the governor came out with this new proposal, and once Pam makes her presentation, it'll become much more clear, I hope, to all of you.
Okay, fine.
Okay. Because it's been a process for all of us.
Mr. Chair, and does it...
Representative Boone.
Does that have anything to do with the bill that...
No.
No.
The current presentation right now, we are going on nothing with the bill.
Okay.
It's just how the governor proposes his budget. I guess. Sorry, it's very, very confusing.
Okay.
On page 19 for the 2003-2005 session, you can see that we had $694,087 in other funds and $477,947 of federal funds.
Would you break down the other funds for us?
The other funds is specifically funds from the Deaf and Hard of Hearing Access Program contracts and money that's received for the Oregon Youth Leadership Forum Conference and money that's received for the Employer Awards Program that we have every 2 years.
Okay.
The federal funds is primarily pass-through money to the subcontractors as well. We take a small administrative fee off the top, which I believe it's 7% for CAP, and for ATI, I believe it's the same. It's almost 8. It's like 7.8% for the Talon contract.
Okay.
And with my presentation is ended, and I'll move on to Pam to talk about the current proposed budget of the governor's office.
Okay, now you're not going anywhere, though.
No, I'm going to sit right here.
Mr. Chair, members of the subcommittee, my name is Pam Teschner, and I'm with the Department of Administrative Services. And I will try to make more clear what the current proposal is on the table for the 0507 budget. But before we get into some of the detail of that, I am going to be going through the handout that you should have that's a skinny one that says the 2005-07 governor's recommended budget for the Oregon Disabilities Commission. So that's what I'm going to be paging through in the next few minutes. I want to make sure that you all have it. It's not actually in their binder. It was a separate one this morning.
Should be a step. Where'd they go?
They're over by the door on the table.
All right, so if we're all set now, what I want to do, especially there are a few faces that I don't recognize from the last couple of months that probably are fairly new to the Human Services Program area. So at page 2, what this does is it shows you how the Disabilities Commission fits into the big scheme of things in the entire Human Services Program area. This particular agency and their budget falls within that program area. And so you can see in the pie chart on the left, the Disabilities Commission budget is a 0.01% of the entire Human Services Program area, total funds. The pie chart on the right represents just general fund and lottery funds. And you won't find them there because there is no general fund or lottery fund in this agency. So that just sets a context for you. Page 3 identifies which of the governor's principles this budget falls within. and it's related to the principle that Oregon's most vulnerable have their basic health, food, and shelter needs met. And I want to make sure I'm not talking too fast either. So, all right. Page 5 shows you there, this is the governor's revised proposal. And maybe I should just give you a little bit of history. When the governor's budget was originally put together, we were doing that process in September and October. And I pretty much had the governor's budget formed for this agency. And at about that time, there was concern about what is the best configuration for this agency long term. We have been talking about this for a number of biennia, and this agency has been struggling with reduced funding and how to perform what they need, the functions they need to perform. And so they've been challenged for a number of years to try to think long term and how to best develop a sustainability plan. And so when we approached the governor's budget, we created it in a way that it would balance, because for the most part, their expenditures, agency-wide, their expenditures are higher than their revenue. And so we brought them in line, but at the same time, there was on the back burner an idea of plan beginning to formulate. Well, the plan didn't completely come together when the governor's budget was due, and so we proposed the governor's budget as it was, the governor's recommended budget, knowing that this at least would put the agency in the governor's budget, but that the plan was to continue working on what is the best proposal for this agency to ease their administrative burden and help them to get focused on the service they provide, because again, they have been struggling with low staffing, low funding to do what they needed to do. And so the agency, the Disabilities Commission, along with the Department of Human Services and my office, Department of Administrative Services, and the governor's office, all began to meet. We began talking in December and began meeting January, February, and over time things began to solidify as far as a new idea, a new approach for this agency to give them a longer-term sustainability plan and help them perform the functions. And so that kind of, that's what I am presenting now. So the GRB, the governor's recommended budget, is history now with this agency. And that, so I'm not even going to talk about it. I'm going to focus on what the governor is proposing right now, what's on the table from the governor's office. So, page 5.
Mr. Chair. Where's the antenna?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Ms. Teschner, yeah. Then, so the budget information that's in this binder no longer applies.
That's correct. Okay. Yes, Mr. Chair, Representative Hannah, that is correct.
We're at an unveiling.
It's okay. I want to make sure we're not comparing. Really, we're writing that one off and going
we
to
are.
The slim deck, and that's the new numbers.
Correct. That's correct. So, don't look at your binder. Look only at this handout. So, page 5 in this handout shows that the total funds for this agency that's being proposed currently is just slightly under $500,000. Well, all of that is other funds. So, the pie chart on page 5 is all just other funds. I can tell you have a question, Deborah. No? Okay. All right. Then I won't stop. So the $492,980 are all other funds. And as Danielle pointed out a minute ago, those other funds are almost entirely the Deaf and Hard of Hearing Access Program dollars, interagency contracts. But there is a little bit of money in this agency for the Youth Leadership Forum that she described earlier. I think that forum is roughly $20,000 to $25,000 to put that on. That money comes in, I think, from the Department of Education. But
including donations or just including the state money?
State money. It is it's
for
20
to 507, 25. It's
yeah.
16,000.
16, okay. Okay. So that's, so you can see that primarily most of the other funds are from the Deaf and Hard of Hearing Access Program dollars, a little bit of donations. The next page 6, takes that total funds budget, which again is all other funds, and shows you how much is dedicated to personal services, which is about three-fourths of it, a little over three-fourths of that money goes to personal services, and about $111,000 going to services and supplies. Page 7 lays out the history for this agency and how their budget has changed over time. You can see a significant change in 2003-05. The legislatively approved budget came out with no general fund, so general fund was taken away from the agency at that time, along with, I think, about 1.5 in FTE. The other funds grew a bit. Federal funds, and again, federal funds in 2003-05 did include the Talon money, technology.
Sorry. Access for Life.
Thank you. And the CAP program, Client Assistance Program. The current 2005-07 governor's revised proposal, still there is no general fund. The other funds, the reduction in the other funds is because what we are proposing is that this agency physically move into the Department of Human Services, remain an independent agency, so employees are still Oregon Disabilities Commission employees. The agency still has its unique statutory authority, but it's living in the walls of the Department of Human Services. And in doing that, it saves the Disabilities Commission some administrative costs, administrative overhead in terms of rent. This agency right now utilizes services within the Department of Administrative Services for accounting. Danielle has done the budget for them. So there's a lot of administrative work currently in this biennium, 2003-05, that they fund. What this proposal does is moves the agency physically into the Department of Human Services, who then will pick up those functions, administrative functions, such as accounting and budgeting, their telecommunications costs. Of course, they won't have rent to pay. And so the expenditures, the other funds' expenditures, will be quite dramatically reduced because of that. So that's what the heart and soul of this proposal is a physical move to reduce the administrative costs. And I've got some information. I can go into that with more detail in a little bit.
I have a question. When you earlier, it was mentioned that there's some federal funds, and in things that I've read before, it seems to me that there is a need for the agency to exist because it is a, you know, it is a source or catalyst or something for federal money. Is that correct?
Yes, Mr. Chair, I know what you're talking about. The Client Assistance Program is a federal fund that money that Oregon has to have a Client Assistance Program in order to receive federal funds in the Vocational Rehabilitation Program. And so the Disabilities Commission has been that agency that has received those funds. We are proposing a change in that, and I'll show you that in a moment. But yes, I think that's what you're talking about. Anyway, so you can see on this page in the 2005-07 Governor's Revised Proposal that there's that $492,820 that's all other funds, the Deaf and Hard of Hearing Access Program interagency contracts. I know I ripped that off real fast, and I need to slow down. So on page 8 then, this was the major what I've just been talking about was really the major policy issue facing this commission and the governor's office was how do we go about putting together an optimal structure for long-term sustainability and still provide the service that they have been providing. And so I laid out a little bit of that history a moment ago, how we began to work through that and have come to what we have today. So on page 9, this does lay out some of those details, and I'm going to address a question that you had a moment ago, Mr. Chair. But our goal then was to reduce the administrative burden that this agency was carrying, but retain and strengthen the core functions within a more long-term sustainable structure. So our plan again, four offices working together, the Disabilities Commission, the Department of Human Services, the Department of Administrative Services, and the Governor's Office worked to develop this plan to transition the agency into the Department of Human Services, but still with the goal of maintaining their independence. And we believed that this was important so that the, in order to maintain a good, strong base of advocacy for their clients. The second point here is, as I mentioned a moment ago, the Department of Human Services will provide accounting and budgeting services. The executive director position will be split equally between the commission and the Department of Human Services. So that currently, which is a full-time position, a 1.0 FTE executive director position, will now be 0.5 of that position will be with the department, with the Department of Human Services, and the other half of the position with the Disabilities Commission. So that right now the thinking is that there would be one person, which would be half-time with the Department of Human Services and half-time with the Disabilities Commission. I know that's a bit of an unusual arrangement.
This is unique. Representative Hannah.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Ms. Teschner, so will that person who was acting as the director basically maintain the same responsibility? but continue to just be employed half-time by each?
Mr. Chair and Representative Hannah, the original plan, whether it's Danielle, which she will address that in a moment, whether it's Danielle or whoever will be in that position, the idea was that one person would then be employed by two agencies, by the commission as well as by the Department of Human Services. Now, that configuration could also be two separate people, half-time in each agency. How we work out the details of that is yet to be seen, because I think part of it depends on who the specific person is, ultimately what the Department of Human Services wants to do. James Taves behind us here is here because I anticipate there might be some specific questions that he could address that we wouldn't be able to. But so that's a detail we're still yet to work out. But the original thought, and I checked with our HR people to find out, can that be done and how is that done? And they did say yes, that it's not a typical configuration, but certainly it is possible to do that. Danielle, would you like to say anything?
Sure. Mr. Chair and members of the subcommittee, just specifically, the person in that position, the 0.5 FTE that the Disabilities Commission would have in their grasp, would, yes, administer the majority of the functions that it currently does right now, with the fact that I currently work the budget. I do everything that's required of the agency to do the budget. When the transition happens, or if the transition happens, my position specifically will not have to do that. My position would work closely with the Department of Human Services with the numbers, but DHS has a huge budget department that would put together our small budget into the what you guys see into the book and work the numbers. And excuse me really quick, this is Daryl Ackerman, the chair of our commission. I'd like to introduce him if you have any questions for him. However, with the rest of the functions, as far as being the mediator and the advocator for the members, or for people in the community, yeah, that position would still do that. Coordinate the youth leadership forum, coordinate the employers program that happens yearly. All of the duties would be the same except for the budget, which is a huge portion of the position. So it would easily be able to work within the 0.5 FTE because it'd be eliminated from the job description.
Mr. Hanson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Question. When we're looking at the total $492,000, you said that was all deaf and hard of hearing dollars. Is that could
almost?
Mr.
We
Chair.
We see the other graph on page 4 that shows roughly 50-50 split between deaf and hard of hearing program and general operations. Are those general operations dollars the ones that come from the agencies for? Well, explain where those come from.
Yes. Mr. Chair, Representative Hansen, the other funds for this agency are almost all the deaf and hard of hearing access program dollars. So the whole pie is almost all that from that program. Those dollars, some of them are going to the Deaf and Hard of Hearing Access Program, and some of them go to support the general operations. Now, that's how it has been in 0305. We wanted, and to back up, there wasn't enough, because the general fund was taken away in 0305, there wasn't enough money to support the general operations budget. There was just a little bit of donation money and a little bit of Youth Leadership Forum dollars coming in. And so there was a small amount of money, not nearly enough to support the general operations, which is primarily staffing and some services and supplies costs. So the prior director contacted all of those agencies, and there's roughly, what, a dozen, 10 to 12 agencies that contract with the Disabilities Commission for the Deaf and Hard of Hearing Program. She contacted each one of them and reached agreement with all of them that they agreed to allow their dollars to be spent to help support just the general operations of the agency, with the understanding that that would be a short-time safety net, so that in 0507 there could be a plan so that they would not rely on the Deaf and Hard of Hearing Access Program dollars. So in 0507, the current proposal is that the Department of Human Services will take some of what they have put into the Deaf and Hard of Hearing Access Program and use it to support the general operations, so that it's not technically money tagged for the Deaf and Hard of Hearing Access Program. So now, in this proposal, it is better separated. In 0305, it wasn't. It was just that's one pot of money, and that money went to support general operations. We wanted to move away from that so that general operations would have its own money and not rely on this other money. And so in the page four graph, that half and half split, a lot of that $246,000 is coming from the Department of Human Services to support their general operations as through an interagency contract. And again, they will be providing their budgeting, their accounting, and that sort of thing. So some of the detail of how that's going to be worked out is yet to be seen, but that's that's the idea there, that in 0305, the DHAP money pretty much supported the whole agency, and we didn't want that to continue. The agreement was just, we'll let you do that this biennium, but we got to figure out a different plan for 0507, and that's what this is.
So it sounds to me like the different plan is that instead of identifying the money as money coming from the agencies for supporting deaf and hard of hearing, they've reduced that amount in order to create a new funding source for the general operations.
They have reduced that amount because services, the expenditures have been reduced. So, Mr. Chair, Representative Hansen, for example, the agency will no longer pay rent because they will be within the walls of the Department of Human Services. And so you see those dollars coming down because those expenditures are coming down. Yes, you're right. The expenditures for that program came down because of their move. And so the budget for that program shows this reduction. And the Department of Human Services will be providing money to help support the general operations. I might not be. Is there anything I'm missing, James, with this? I'm not sure how to better say it.
Well, it sounds to me like dollars earmarked for the deaf and hard of hearing were used last biennium to support the whole program.
Mm-hmm.
This time, instead of giving that block of money to the commission to support the whole program, we're backing it out before it goes to the commission and using it for some indirect support. But it's still basically the same deaf and hard of hearing dollars as were originally earmarked. So I guess the next question is, between DAS, DHS, the governor's office, in the commission. What input have you got from the deaf community in terms of looking at this new proposal? And how is that process? If we're talking about the bulk of it being a resource that was earmarked originally for deaf and hard of hearing people, what have you done in terms of buy-off from that community in terms of this new proposal?
Mr. Chair and members of the subcommittee, if you don't mind, I'd like to answer that. Specifically, the Disabilities Commission hosted a town hall in February that was made up with the majority of the deaf community, and James Taves from the Department of Human Services was also there. And DHS, through James Taves, has also worked with the deaf community on their specific needs and issues that they've addressed with DHS and the dollars that DHS provides their program. For 0507, through this budget, it provides that community more staff, specifically. Deborah's shaking her head no, but they're getting a reduction in their program manager, but they're getting a trainer, which we've been told no through the last few bienniums that we couldn't have for that program. The Disabilities Commission has asked the community, we know what their needs are. Myself, not when I was not acting director, but as when I was working as office manager, and Bob Pope, who's the current chair of the Deaf and Hard of Hearing Access Program, met with the Department of Human Services in August to specifically work with them and tell them what the needs were of that community. And we came up with many, many pages of what that community specifically needed. The commission is fully aware that there are many services and needs of the deaf and hard of hearing community, but we have never had the funds nor the staff to provide the services that they require. So through this proposal, by moving into the Department of Human Services, not only does it provide sustainability for the commission, but it also provides sustainability for the Deaf and Hard of Hearing Access Program. Representative Boone earlier asked about the bill, House Bill 3230, which is being proposed to separate the two programs because the Deaf and Hard of Hearing Access community or the Deaf and Hard of Hearing community wants to have their own program within the Department of Human Services. The Department of Human Services has said if House Bill 3230 passes, they're still willing to fund the Oregon Disabilities Commission at the level of 1.5 FTE, which is the 0.5 executive director and the 1.0 office specialist that would provide the advocacy administrative services separately from the Deaf and Hard of Hearing Access Program. Does that make anything more clear?
I'd like to get LFO's viewpoint on as well. Ms. Mamphy?
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I apologize, Danielle. The reason I was shaking my head is when we talk about that the Deaf and Hard of Hearing Access Program hasn't been reduced, but I look at prior biennial actuals, it clearly has been. The expenditures were historically at a much higher level, and the revenue was there to support it. It's as the Commission's budget was reduced and the reductions were taken in the Deaf and Hard of Hearing program, not in the operations, yet the revenue for Deaf and Hard of Hearing continued at the high level. They're creating the subsidy issue. So I'm not sure I agree, not that that's important, that the Deaf and Hard of Hearing program hasn't been reduced. I believe it has, and I believe Representative Hansen characterized it accurately. We've taken a fixed pot of dollars, and we've shifted it. Instead of showing it as deaf and hard of hearing revenue, we're now going to show it as revenue to operations, and I agree it's an important split, but still, it's the same fixed set of money, and we haven't really addressed the issue of funding operations, other than to say that the Department of Human Services is now responsible for funding operations. And as we move forward into 0709, in order, it looks like to me, without additional revenue, in order to keep the Deaf and Hard of Hearing Access Program at the same level, the Department of Human Services is going to have to kick that amount up. So that's
I can't really answer for the Department of Human Services and how their money is split out because I'm not the Department of Human Services. But if James wants to come forward and talk about how their money is split specifically, I do know that, I imagine that it probably all does come from the same pot of money and that they're going to separate it to make sure both programs survive, and how the Department of Human Services works with either the Oregon Disabilities Commission as a whole with the with the Deaf and Hard of Hearing Access Program, or separately if the bill passes. It's yet to be seen. I specifically can't answer that question.
I would like to ask you, you'd mentioned, was it House Bill 3230?
Yes.
Is that the one? And you said that if that were to go through, it would move aside the deaf and hard of hearing and all of the money that is attributed that goes
Correct.
With that, right?
Yes.
And that the Disabilities Commission would continue with 1.5 FTE as is currently being discussed as a part of DHS.
Correct.
But there would be, but so then the funding would actually be DHS money?
No.
Okay, well, where else would the money come from if the money that's being proposed almost all is coming from a department of...
The money portion of it is correct.
Deaf and hard of hearing. Please identify yourself.
I'm Darrell Ackerman, Chairman of the Oregon Disabilities Commission. If that bill passes, and even if the bill doesn't pass, the Oregon Disabilities Commission is entering into a contract with the Department of Human Resources.
Okay.
The Disabilities Commission will remain a separate entity.
Okay.
By
you
statute.
Know, I misspoke myself when I said it become a part of.
That's
it.
The only...
It will become under the umbrella of
Correct.
DHS. They'll be housed by, they'll be supported by, and they'll be funded to some extent by.
Correct.
But they'll still be separate.
Correct.
Kind of.
Kind of.
They'll still have their own agency number.
Yeah, right. They'll have an agency number.
Well, okay. Representative Boone.
Okay, I'll continue on that track. Then what happens to the $492,000?
Well, specifically the bill, which is what we're talking about, House Bill 3230, if 3230 passes, it's specifically written into the bill to where all of the other funds that comes to the Oregon Disabilities Commission will then be rerouted through new contracts from all of the 11 contract holders that we have to the Department of Human Services, and they will then administer it through their new program, which would be the Office for the Deaf and Hard of Hearing. Right? The Office for the Deaf and Hard of Hearing.
Services.
The Office for the Deaf and Hard of Hearing Services. So then all the other fund money that the Oregon Disabilities Commission sees would then go to the Department of Human Services through new contracts.
Okay. Clear?
And then follow up. Yeah. So how do we then put this budget together with that if, since we don't know?
You don't do budgets with ifs. So.
Right. We're not, specifically House Bill 3230 is not supposed to be in your brain, from what I understand. It's not supposed to be in mine either. And the governor's office has said that we can't take a position on our budget because we don't know where House Bill 3230 will go. It's still in the House currently. So... Right now, we're debating our budget based on the current proposal, and then when January rolls around, things may change.
Okay. Representative Henson, and then Ms. Manfield.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. My suggestion would be that at some point, probably sooner rather than later, we should deal with 3230 as a way to clarify the situation, and then we could move forward with.
Considering June 1st is tomorrow and committees are shutting down very quickly, I think that's a wise proposal. Ms. Manfield.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I think one of the other things we can do is, as we move through this process, is to be really clear about, within this budget, what's operations and what's deaf and hard of hearing access program. And if we can keep those two things real clear on revenue and expenditures, when we come to the other bill, it'll be a real clean. We can pick this piece up and shift it over. So we can still make decisions here on this budget.
Right.
I'm interested in something that either you or Pam could tell us, and that is how much, when we're looking at the 0507 governor's revised proposal and it shows $492,820, we know that $16,000 of it or so is one little pool of money. The money that is left, is that 100% of the deaf and hard of hearing money, or is there other portions of that money that is not shown here?
For other funds?
Just anywhere.
Well, as I mentioned in my presentation, Mr. Chair and members of the subcommittee, I apologize, I'm very terrible about my address. We have the federal funds that we take administrative fee off the top of. So we have the 7% from the Technology Access for Life Needs Grant, 7.8%, and the 7.2% of the Client Assistance Program. If this proposal is accepted and we move into the Department of Human Services, the Client Assistance Program grant will leave. So we would not have that 7.2% administrative fee that we would draw off of for our admin program.
Okay, now we're talking, that's federal funds, is that right?
Right.
Okay, so this let's cut to the chase, which is, I'd like to know on the deaf and hard of hearing money, is all of their money represented in the $492,000?
Yes. Mm-hmm. Okay. It's all other fund money.
All right. And then if this other bill went through, all of that money goes, and then there will be a new meeting to discuss what the budget would be.
Mr. Chair, in the revised proposal, that $492,000, technically, we are now, with the revised proposal, only half of that. In that one graph, I believe it's page 4, half of the $492,000 is Deaf and Hard of Hearing Access Program. The other half is money coming from the department. Most of the other half is money coming from the Department of Human Services to support general operations and is not Deaf and Hard of Hearing Access Program dollars.
So my question is, when I look on page 4 graph and it says $246,874 is Deaf and Hard of Hearing money, is that 100% of the money that Deaf and Hard of Hearing programs have?
Yes.
Yes.
That's right.
Except for the beginning balance.
Except for the
carryover. True. There's that piece, yes. Okay, that's fine. True.
Representative Hansen.
Thank you. Mr. Chair, the just for clarification, the $245,000 general operations dollars that is not part of the deaf and hard of hearing program. Historically, though, that was money that the agency earmarked for deaf and hard of hearing access programs. Though.
Yes, Mr. Chair and Representative Hansen, so 0305. The general operations dollars were dollars coming out of the Deaf and Hard of Hearing Access Program. You're correct.
Yeah. Previous.
But previous, excuse me, in 0103, there was general fund to support the general operations of approximately $300,000, I believe, $200,000 to $300,000 of general fund. But when that was eliminated from their budget, then what was supported by general fund shifted to the Deaf and Hard of Hearing Access Program dollars, the other funds. And we're trying to make some correction now.
So, okay, historically, though, previous to the last biennium, when there was general fund support, then there was an increased amount of dollars that were going to the Deaf and Hard of Hearing programs that were coming from DHS and from other agencies.
Mr. Chair and Representative Hansen, I think one thing that would be helpful to understand, too, and Deborah brought this up a moment ago, the deaf and hard of hearing access dollars that were being spent or are being spent this biennium to support general operations are primarily carryover dollars. Because of that imbalance that Deborah was pointing out, revenue was higher than expenditures, so we were beginning to collect unspent funds. And so there was a significant amount of beginning balance to start 0305, which was primarily, probably almost entirely, deaf and hard of hearing access dollars. That large beginning balance is what was being spent down. So in the big picture, yes, they were spending deaf and hard of hearing access dollars. And I think we were just working through some numbers on Friday. It was just under $200,000 that has been spent this biennium, that will be spent this biennium, I think $190,000 that will be spent this biennium to support general operations that came from the Deaf and Hard of Hearing Access Program dollars, in most of it from that beginning balance that the agency started the biennium with. Does that answer your question?
Okay. Sort of.
There are a couple of points. Then on page 9, Danielle already mentioned that this proposal also adds a trainer position back to the program that had been eliminated previously. The last bullet is related to a question I think that you, Mr. Chair, had brought up a moment ago about the client assistance program. Again, this proposal has no federal funds in it, whereas the current biennium does have federal funds. It has the client assistance program federal dollars, and it has the Talon federal dollars. As Danielle mentioned, the Talon program is sunsetting, has already sunset. We don't know how much money we're going to get, so it's not in this budget. But we will be getting some, and so you'll probably see us come back in an e-board. The client assistance program, because this program advocates for vocational rehabilitation clients, that money cannot go to the agency that provides the program. And so when we were putting this proposal together, we knew it would be best to move that program away from the Disabilities Commission, because even though they are still a separate agency, the fact that they're housed within the Department of Human Services does not look good for from the federal perspective, that they're sending money that looks like it's going into the Department of Human Services to advocate for DHS clients. So the governor's office right now is working with the U.S. Department of Education Rehabilitation Services Administration to move that grant away from the commission. And what we're looking at the moment is moving it to the Oregon Advocacy Center, who receives the dollars anyway right now and provides that service. So instead of having it be a pass-through, just we're going to recommend it flow directly to that.
At a 7% savings.
Yes.
That's right.
So that's the end of of my presentation. If you have any further questions, would be glad to answer them.
I have a question that you may be able to answer. A couple of contractors in my district have written to me and said that they're basically, because of how the money's constructed, aren't unable to pay their clients to do the work past a certain amount. And does this ring a bell to you?
Mm-hmm. What? No. I'm sorry. Can you be more specific?
Okay.
What contractors?
Are you talking about like building contractors or agencies?
A Marie Mills Center, for example, in Tillamook. They're unable to pay the people who work for them more of a living wage because they're constrained by the law. Or how the
specifically
money
through the Oregon Disabilities Commission?
That's what I'm not sure of.
No,
so.
It would. Okay. We have no authority over anybody, and there's no law that specifically
rehab. Okay.
Yeah, through the vocational rehab, that's possible through the Rehab Act, but it wouldn't specifically have anything to do with the client assistance program.
Okay, thanks.
We have some public testimony that also needs to be heard. Now, Director Ackerman, you came a little bit late. Did you want to add anything to the presentation that's been given?
At this point, no. I think it was covered pretty well.
All right.
The only point that I might add is, as chairman of the commission and many of the commissioners, when we started having budget problems and staff reductions, we still had a contractual obligation to maintain a DHIAP program and our other grant programs. And so, in at least in my view, the funds that came in for the DHIAP program, we scaled back some of the operations and some of the activities of the commission office staff to make sure that requests coming in to the DHIAP program were being covered. And the figures show, I don't know if those were presented yet, but I know it's in the charts, that in that program, requests for services, almost all of the requests for services under the DHIAP program were provided. We were able to meet all of those needs. There's a minor exception, and those were basically due to very short timelines where we didn't have the request came in late and we couldn't fill them. So I feel that the commission has done an adequate job of maintaining those services, even in view of all of the cuts and the difficulties that the commission has had.
Okay, now, just to kind of clarify that, you're saying the commission has taken the funds from DHIAP, but because of either efficiency, meaning that you can do the job better, or because of you're paying for the same things that those funds would have gone to anyway, you're able to accomplish the same needs. Because if you're taking part of the money that they had and you're spending it in ways that they wouldn't have spent it, then there's discrepancy, right? And so if there's a discrepancy because you're spending part of the money on other things than what they would spend it on, and you're providing still the same program that they would have before, that means you're either more efficient or more able to provide it, or you're doing it in a different way than they could do it. Is that basically what you're saying?
I'm not sure what you mean by they. Who's
they? They is the deaf and hard of hearing program, the advisory board, maybe the advisory board for DHA.
Well, the advisory committee for the DHIA program is advisory to the commission. They're like any other subcommittee of the commission. We have several committees.
Okay.
And they merely advise and give input about the needs of the deaf and hard of hearing community. And then the commission operates the program. The staff or commission staff that are designated as the DHIA program individuals.
Okay, we'll get that clarified in my mind as we kind of go along. Because there are those in that feel that the use of the DHAP money before, previous to a couple of biennia, it was not funding the commission, and now it is, and so there's been a change in where the funds are being directed. Is that correct?
There's always been a percentage of those DHIAP funds that fund the basic commission administration, because we had the administration and the budgeting responsibilities and the fiduciary responsibilities over that contract. And it was a contract. It was contract funds coming to the commission.
Mr. Chair, if I may, specifically our contracts, we've met the needs of every contract we have over the 2001, 2003, 2005 biennium. In the 2003 session, the previous executive director did go to the contractors that we hold contracts with and ask them to expand on services that were being addressed by the deaf and hard of hearing community. The commission, being that it was the listening ear to that community, was hearing that there was a great need for services in that community, and has always been under that impression and still continues to understand those needs for services. But the commission can only administer what's written inside the contract, and the commission has been successful all along currently by the basis of the standards of the contract to fulfill those needs. That's not saying that that is successful for the deaf and hard of hearing community, because they have a much more need for larger services that the commission cannot provide based on the restraints of our contracts.
Okay. And so is it correct that before 100% of their funds was going, that part of their funds was being used for other items that they felt was important?
All along, the contracts have been the exact same. They have not expanded because the contractors, the other agencies, have chosen not to expand on their services. The commission has maintained a regular service, which there are three services being provided through all the contracts: training for the deaf and hard of hearing communities, training to state agencies on deaf culture and TTY, and interpreter coordination services. Those three services have been administered all along through the contracts and have not been expanded on, not because the commission hasn't understood that need, but because the contractors have decided not to do that.
Okay, I'm with you on that.
Okay.
The focus that you're responding to is what the contract said. My focus is on what was being done in addition to the contracts for the deaf and hard of hearing population when they had more control over their money.
Well, technically, they've never had control over their money.
Was it just accumulating then?
Well, the money has always been administered through the Disabilities Commission, and then whatever the advisory committee has said to the commission, the commission has attempted to expand on services. But again, those services have been denied through contractors. So we can only administer what the legislature tells us we can do. We have never had the ability to have more services provided because we haven't had additional staff to do that.
Was there ever times when they had additional locations or
no?
No.
No, the commission has always been with the same program in the same office.
Tell you what, that answers the question. Let's hear from a couple of representatives from the app. Is that all right?
Thank you.
So, thank you very much, and we may ask you to step up and clarify something before we're done, okay? And with that, if we could have Mr. Dave Veers come and speak to us.
Representative Richardson, representatives, thank you very much for hearing me. I have to admit that I'm upset about what I've been hearing. First of all, We don't have an interpreter. This young lady is volunteering her time. We don't have a real-time capture. This gentleman over here can use an interpreter. I cannot because I don't know sign language that well. So if I had known ahead of time that this was going to be happening, I would have requested a real-time capture. Part of my complaint here is that I'm on the Deaf and Hard of Hearing Access Program as an advisory committee, as a member. I should have been informed that this was taking place. Automatically, we should have had a captioner and an interpreter. I should even have had to request it from this type of a group of people. I'm president of the Self-Help for Hard of Hearing People of Oregon. It's a state association here in the state of Oregon. I have a long history with the Deaf and Hard of Hearing Access Program. I was on the advisory the task force that created that advisory committee years and years ago. And up until about 3 years ago, I was a steady member. I dropped off for about 3 years and then came on probably around September, October of last year. Presently, you have one manager. Oh, pardon me. Historically, we have had five positions underneath of the DHAP program. Daryl uses DHIAP because it used to be called the Deaf and Hard of Hearing Act, Deaf and Hard and Hearing Impaired Access Program. So sometimes it's DHIAP and sometimes it's DHAP because it is presently called the Deaf and Hard of Hearing Access Program. We had five positions in three locations. Presently, we have not even a full-time manager and an interpreter coordinator. And we had a trader position fairly recently, but that was axed. Why has there been that reduction? Because basically, in 03 and 05 has already been discussed, the Oregon Disability Commission went to the Ways and Means Committee and requested that they be allowed to use some of the DHAP money. I have heard, and I can't swear to it, but I've heard it's been as much as 70%. That is why we don't have all of our positions filled like they should be. DHAP itself is essentially self-supporting. We have contracts with various state agencies to provide interpreter referral, real-time captioning, training to their staff. A lot of that has gone by the way. I think we're still providing the interpreter referral, probably the real-time captioning, but the training is essentially non-existent now. If you go back and look at the deaf community from a historical standpoint, you will find that there have been generations where hearing people have been basically doing for deaf people. They are rightly upset about that type of thing. They feel there should be a certain amount of self-determination within their own community. I feel that it is absolutely essential that a person managing this program has a training in and sensitivity to deaf and hard of hearing people. An example, I've worked with deaf people for many years, even though I'm not culturally deaf myself, I'm hard of hearing. Nonetheless, back in about 1987, I went into the Western Oregon University's master's program in rehabilitation counseling with an emphasis in deafness. Why? Because I wanted to have that broad basic background, and I acquired it. If you turn around and you look at an executive director that does not have that type of they don't necessarily have to be deaf or hard of hearing, but they have to have the training in that area. They have to have that sensitivity. Otherwise, they're not going to be doing a proper job of administering this large DHAP program. And I think the lack of captioning, interpreting, and the lack of the information being provided to the committee is an example of that lack of sensitivity.
Just a moment, please. Representative Hansen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This proposal from the governor's office, was that reviewed by your advisory committee?
I heard about it through the grapevine via email last week. Nobody has ever approached the DHAP advisory committee about this.
Okay, a question. the panel before said that the Disabilities Commission is essentially doing all that was expected or contracted for DHAP. Do you agree that they are they're providing all of the services that
were
expected?
No, I don't. I don't think they are providing all those.
In what areas do you think there
is? Well, training to staff is a prime example. They don't have a trainer any longer. And the president DHAP manager can't go out there because she's doing a large part of what she's doing is for the Oregon Disabilities Commission. She's not even though she's the quote unquote DHAP manager, a large part of her duties have to do with the Oregon Disabilities Commission, not with that. She's not really able to go out there and do the training and this type of thing because she doesn't have the time for it.
Was that training taking place a few years ago?
I'm sorry, say that again.
Was that training taking place?
Yes.
And who was performing that?
We had a trainer position.
And who is we?
The DHAP program had a trainer position.
Okay, I'm still trying to clarify what's going on because I was told the Disabilities Commission has all along controlled the money and conducted the program.
Right, let me put it to you this way. Okay. In the last biennium, a large portion of the money from the DHAP program has been used to fund the Oregon Disabilities Commission. If you go back before then, in theory, the DHAP money was used for the DHAP program. Quite frankly, a large part of that money was still being used, even without the okay of the Ways and Means Committee, it was still being used. Okay, I know, for example, that, and I don't know whether these names mean anything to you or not, Eugene Oregon was the executive director. He was a person with diabetes, and he had a vision impairment. The DHAP manager was essentially his chauffeur that would take him around to the various meetings, etc. Now, I don't want to bog us down into a lot of the what has happened in the past, but I know that's an example. Here you've got a full-time manager position, and instead of doing what he's really hired to do, which is to manage the DHAP program, he's chauffeuring this executive director around.
Okay, just so that we understand how it was set up before, are you saying, I mean, this is probably elementary for you, but we have the Disabilities Commission, and then it had a program which was DHAP, and DHAP basically had its own funding and had five positions. Is that correct?
Correct.
And then the money that DHAP had was needed by the commission, so that was kind of transferred, and it cut back on the program for DHAP itself.
Correct.
And your concern is that is not meeting the needs of the deaf and hard of hearing community.
Correct. That's exactly correct.
All right.
Mr. Chair.
And I've seen it being reduced more and more and more. Until now, you've got a shell that is not able to do nearly as much as it should be doing.
Okay. You made that very, very clear. We have a question from Representative Hansen, and there's also two other people that need to speak. Excuse me, Representative Hanna.
Sure.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Veers, you talk about the self-supporting income from clients to the DHAP program. That is for training that was provided and so forth to the different agencies. Our budget materials that have any history to them only show charges for services. Do you have any recollection of what the income that would support the agency was? I mean, do you know what it might have been?
You mean over the amount? The last biennium?
Mm-hmm.
You can't quote me on this, but I've heard it's in the area of $500,000, $500,000. But it could be a little bit less. That's the figure I've heard.
Okay, thank you.
Okay. Representative Hansen.
Well, quickly, are those the dollars that are generated by through the PUC for line charges for telephones?
Can you say that one more time, please?
Does that money originate from telephone usage fees?
No.
TV
was. No, this was not through the PUC. There is something called the TDD relay service, and there was funding that went through PUC for that. Yes, that happened and has been happening on a steady basis, but that's totally separate from the DHAP program.
Okay. Thank you very much for coming forward and making that clear to us. We now would like to hear from George Scholler.
I don't understand.
With the Oregon Association of the Deaf.
My name is George Scholler. I'm from Albany, Oregon. I'm here representing the Oregon Association for the Deaf. interpreter forgot she's supposed to sign for me. I joined the Deaf and Hard of Hearing Advisory Board probably about 4 years ago, although I have worked a lot with the people who worked in this program over the years. What you've heard testifying today, I think you're looking at half-truths and truths, you know. What happened here 2 years ago when the legislation decided to take all general fund money from commissions, this left the Oregon Disability Commission with no funding to operate. What I understand happened is that the director of ODC then went, without our knowledge, to the Legislative Emergency Board and asked them if they would give her the okay to use part of the DHAP funds to continue operating. And the legislative board gave it to them. Now, the deaf community had no knowledge about this. It was through cuts in staff. We used to have five people in that office. Pretty soon, our trainer, Mark Azure, he left. It was through him that we started to get information about what was really going on in the office there. And this is where we found out that these funds were being taken from our program to be used for something else. So if you look at the history over the last 2 years, we had five people. And as time went along, that kept going down till now. I think it's about 1.5 right now. And that 1.5 is only good until June 30th of this year, and then it's gone. Okay, you heard testimony today that if there was Oregon Disability Commission sees that ODC has these funds left over, sure, because they eliminated this position, so naturally they had funds left there. So you think, well, nobody's using it, so we're taking it. Instead of replacing the people that they were letting go. And then this last time, when the program manager retired, we hired in another program manager. She moved clear up here from California to take this job. And what really got me mad was that I was on that interview committee. But I did not have all the knowledge that I have now about how the fundings and that program were being operated. And so our interview with this director was really not proper because we didn't have all the information. Only after we hired her and she worked for 6 months and then quit did we find out all of this that was going on in that office. They were asking her to do an impossible job. With so little funds, staff, she can't run the program, run out and be training, run around getting contracts and all that stuff. And as you know, the Oregon Disability Commission looks at more of people with physical disabilities. Deafness is not a physical disability. It is a communications disability. And so our needs are far different from that of what a physical disability is. Because deafness is a communication issue, your whole learning process is by sound. All of my learning process is by sight. I have to have various things in order to learn, in order to survive, in order to work. I think if you look back over the last 20 years in the state of Oregon, in private industry, 20 years ago, deaf and hard of hearing people, they all had jobs. I had jobs. But today, if you look at those same companies and look at those same state agencies today, the number of deaf and hard of hearing people that are working there is way reduced. I used to work for Tektronix for 27 years. At the highest peak, we had 70 deaf and hard of hearing people working there. Today, there's only two. only two left. Why? Because back in those days, we had training programs to where the human resource people in these companies were trained on how to work with people with communications disabilities, how to work with people with physical disabilities. Norm Silvers was one of those people who went through that training. He went into human resources and Tektronix with all this knowledge. And since the day he came in, all of the deaf and hard of hearing, other handicaps, employment went up. Tektronix started hiring him because he could train their people how to work with them, how to accommodate them. But when Norm retired, the employment rate went down, 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 down. John Alston got two there. So this Deaf and Hard of Hearing Access Program is only working with state agencies. That's the way it's set up. But how many deaf and hard of hearing are working for the state of Oregon now? I can probably count them on my hand. 10 fingers. Probably about 10 are working for the state. It's not right. That's why we set this program up, was to train these agencies so that they can understand how to work with these people. We can't do it if the funds keep going. Now, you talk about these two House bills. Okay, House Bill 3230, we're asking you to move the Oregon Disability Commission and the Deaf and Hard of Hearing Program over to DHS, to separate them, so that they can't touch our funds ever again, and we can run the program the way we want it to be run. The deaf now are more aware of what's been going on, and so now we're coming together more strongly, and we want to make this program expand.
Mr. Schiller? I'd like to have you conclude so that I have time to ask the Department of, or the Oregon Disabilities Commission people to answer some of the points that you've brought up.
Okay, just one other thing. In the Senate bill, that is what this PUC thing you heard about is. We know there's no money in the general fund. The present DHAP program can only serve state agencies. What about outside of state agencies in private industry? And what about other services? Right now, if a deaf person living, even in the city of Portland, if a deaf individual has any problems, needs any help, there's nothing there. There's no place he can go. He can walk into any state agency, any private thing. He can't get the help he needs because it's a communications thing, and they do not have the communications there to help him. Writing back and forth is something that holds you back. I mean, if I was to take away your hearing and we had to communicate by writing only, things go so slow you just almost give up. It's the same thing. That's where this other bill comes in. We're asking for 5 cents from the PUC bill. That lost 35-cent cap. They've only used 10 cents of it all these years. Give us 5 cents. We can set up 5 deaf service centers in the state of Oregon using that. It can be administered through the Deaf and Hard of Hearing Access Program. Oh, it's a beautiful thing. You can walk out to your car and find 5 pennies in your car. You're not going to complain about 5 pennies, are you?
Thank you.
Thank you.
We'd like to invite Sherry Andrus to step forward.
This is extremely unethical for me to interpret and testify at the same time, but I've been put into that situation.
Your hands make sure that you're doing it.
Unfortunately, the deaf community is not going to know what I'm saying. So, Representative Richardson and members of the subcommittee, Like Danielle, I'm also nervous all of a sudden.
You need to be.
I know. My name is Sherry Andrus, and I'm a sign language interpreter in Oregon for over 20 years. I also sit on the Deaf and Hard of Hearing Access Committee, their advisory committee. It is the Deaf and Hard of Hearing Access program that I'm here to talk about today. I have worked with them, with DHAP since the mid-80s, and have seen the agency go from three offices around the state to the current one in Salem. That one office is responsible for serving the entire state of Oregon. For years, the office has maintained the program manager, the trainer, the coordinator, and an office assistant. The trainer was constantly on the go, traveling around the state, training state employees on how to work with deaf and hard of hearing clientele. These trainings are essential to tearing down old myths, teaching employees proper and improper ways of communicating with deaf and hard of hearing individuals, educating them on the legalities of providing qualified interpreters, and a variety of other essential topics that lasted anywhere from 2 hours to an all-day training. But most important, the trainings allow the employees to feel more comfortable around deaf and hard of hearing people, so that when the deaf and hard of hearing did use the state agencies, it was a positive experience for both. The DHAP interpreter coordinator is also responsible for keeping up with the entire state and keeping it in compliance with the ADA by coordinating the interpreter and coordinator and captioner request for all the agencies throughout the state so that they can effectively communicate with their clientele. Our one interpreter coordinator has been known on several occasions to be there at DHAP at 10 o'clock on a Friday night trying to catch up and fulfill all those needs. DHAP's manager and assistant positions were vital for the daily duties of keeping the office running and responding to the community. Since Oregon doesn't have sufficient services, as you've heard from the other testimonies, for deaf and hard of hearing Oregonians, DHAP is the one agency that they can go to for help on a variety of issues. For example, as you probably know, Oregon now is a state that tests newborns' hearing when they're first in the hospital. What happens when a child is deaf? The parents have no place to go, and it's often DHAP that they go to for finding the resources that they need. When a deaf person is denied access by a company that is covered under the ADA, they turn to DHAP to get the help that they need. As new legislation arises locally or nationally that could affect the deaf or hard of hearing community, DHAP was able to get help, was able to educate the individuals associated with the legislation and the deaf and hard of hearing community so they understood the impacts of the concepts introduced. Almost daily, back when they had staff, DHAP was able to be a liaison between deaf individuals and companies to help solve issues at the lowest level possible, thus avoiding further legal action. It was the DHAP program manager that used to be responsible for filling all of these daily in-and-out needs for the state. However, as you heard throughout the years, the DHAP program has suffered more and more cuts. The loss of their trainer position has affected their ability to effectively train state employees in a qualified and consistent manner. This has often affected the quality of service and treatment deaf and hard of hearing people receive when they access or try to access state agencies. It is my hope that you support the recommendation to reinstate our DHAP trainer. Our newest concern is the loss of our DHAP program manager position. As stated earlier, the community relies on that position to fulfill the daily needs that come up while the trainer is busy out around the state and the coordinator is serving the state contracts. On top of those needs, the DHAP program manager also needs to continue working with the interpreting community as well as educating the state citizens, both deaf and hearing, about the services DHAP offers the state so it will become more visible. I have heard story after story of deaf people that are new to the state and have no idea where to find any resources. Although our services in Oregon are very few, we still need to do the best we can and provide a DHAP program manager to serve those needs to our communities. Unfortunately, our current DHAP program manager who has been in that capacity has been limited because the majority of her time is spent servicing ODC. As a result, the DHAP program, the deaf and hard of hearing communities, and the state have all suffered considerably. In closing, I hope you support the Deaf and Hard of Hearing Access Program this legislative session and ensure a minimum of three full-time DHAP staff, a full-time DHAP program manager, a full-time trainer, and a full-time coordinator in order to keep the state in compliance with the ADA and allow DHAP to get back on track with the services they were intended to do for the state. You know, very often when people are unhappy with an elected official, it is then that they decide to run for office. They could be very, very silent for years until that moment when they've had enough. And I would like to use that analogy for the deaf and hard of hearing communities this year. For years, the deaf and hard of hearing have been silent during these legislative sessions. Most of the time, they're not informed that there's even legislative sessions going on. But others have spoken for them and their needs without their feedback and consent. But they are quiet no more. Their campaign is titled, Can You Hear Us Now? And it's been very visible this legislative session. When they ask you that question, can you hear us now? It is my hope that each and every legislator this session can say, yes, I can, and I did something about it. Thank you for your support.
Thank you very much. I'd like to invite Danielle Knight to come back, if you would. Well, we're starting to put pieces together, and we have a couple questions. And okay. I'll lead off by asking if you can give us an indication as to whether there has been a reduction in DHAP's support positions from 5 to a current level, and if so, what's the justification for that?
Yeah, there has been a reduction. Originally, the 5 positions, I've only been here for a few years, and so I can't speak about the 5 positions because I haven't been around long enough. I do know that the original program was created through the Department of Human Services Vocational Rehabilitation Program. When that program was functioning over at DHS at a much higher dollar amount, they did have 3 service centers, or whatever they called them specifically back then, which was in the very early 80s. Since the commission has had the program, there's only been the 1 center, which is where we are currently. Since I have been with the program, which has been 4 years, there has been, I came in when the year the trainer position was eliminated. There was a program manager and the interpreter coordinator, and so over the last 2 bienniums, they've been functioning at that level. Why the positions have been eliminated, I'm supposed to represent the governor because I work for the governor, and so all I can say is because that's how the governor's budget saw it. I mean, I can offer other side of it, but
no, you're doing what you're supposed to do.
So the governor's office just saw fit for the reduction in that position, those positions, to sustain both programs based on the lack of funds inside Oregon for the last few bienniums. Other than that, I can't say it's because there has been a lack for services, because that is, or a need for services, because that's certainly not the case. It's just a lack of money.
Fiscal exigencies?
Right.
Okay. All right. Thank you. You've been there for 4 years, and I understand this is a long-term transition that's taken place, and this session, we're being asked to make adjustments, and so we just want to make sure we have the information.
Okay.
Are there any other questions that you'd like to ask? Representative Hannah.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Ms. Knight, what percent of your time right now do you spend serving the commission exclusively versus the time spent with the DHAP program?
My position specifically right now states that I administer all contracts and work with all of those contracts. So out of a biennium, I spend the second half of the biennium, probably 50% of my time with the DHAP program, going out and trying to get more contracts, maintaining the current contracts, determining whether the current contracts for that biennium want to carry over to the next biennium, reworking those contracts. In the last 6 months, I have worked more with the DHAP program, trying to get it up to date with the current contracts, not just agency contracts, but the interpreter master contract that the interpreters have to abide by, and the interagency master contract that all agencies and outside agencies, because it was said in public testimony previous that the Disabilities Commission Deaf and Hard of Hearing Access Program only serves state agencies, and that's false information. We have contracts specifically with state agencies, but we do serve public businesses
through an administrative fee cost. We have, there's several doctor's offices that we provide interpreters for that do not have contracts with us. Federal agencies that do not have contracts with us that we provide interpreter coordination services for, with an additional fee, of course, for those services. So it's not written in our statute.
Representative Hannah.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. As a follow-up, we've heard testimony from three people here today who each one seems to indicate that the loss of the trainer position was a significant loss to their community. As the director, do you agree or disagree with that assessment?
I definitely agree. Since I've been the director and the previous program manager, Georgia Ortiz, who was mentioned to come up here from California, since she left, I have made it a priority to try to find a trainer for us through the means that we have. We have three subcontractors that we use to provide trainings that are requested so they can be met. The need for a trainer is very high.
Thank you.
Other questions? Representative Hansen.
Well, we probably don't have to go real deep. I'm still trying to understand why in an area that is so badly underfunded, the training that we were able to develop before the 2003-05 budget, $190,000 carryover that could be used for administrative expenses at a time when we still had this incredible need for training. I guess where I see the need for training, or just as you're probably many of you are aware, my wife works for DHS. Originally, she was working in Bend, where she had received training, and the Bend office was pretty accessible to people with hearing impairments. When she transferred to Portland, that simply wasn't the case. That the office that she was working in, the training just either had existed a long time before and wasn't current with the newer employees, and there's a lot of turnover, or maybe it hadn't occurred at all. But basically what that means is in the areas served by that DHS office, a person with hearing impairment isn't going to be able to be served. Mm-hmm. And that's food stamps, your basic supports for life aren't going to occur because the training hasn't happened yet, or they'll be referred to someplace else, or come in with a friend that can hear and that can translate for them or sign for them, but it's not the way it should be.
Okay. Final comments. Thank you very much for the presentation. Thank you all that have participated. We appreciate you coming and expressing your viewpoints on this important issue and important agency. And with that, without objection, we will adjourn.